clock is rolling again.
21:41. 3 feet, we just passed this one out. That's the 10 feet that they out. Charles D. Schmidt.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Charles D. Schmidt, representing the Oregon School Board Association, and we oppose this bill, and I did not have an opportunity to meet with the House side when it was being discussed. Part of the rationalization for the Oregon Construction Industry Council in making this part of their legislative program, and I quote, was because of problems with respect to records, faulty memories, and other factors, this time increment is much too long. We take exception to that because I don't think you'll find that, at least in the public agency construction experiences, you'll find that records are very carefully kept. Copies of the contracts, specifications, plans, warranties, guarantees, and so on are all on file, and I suspect now in most public agencies would remain on file for the life of a particular building. It's our contention that, aside from the fact that these conditions are a matter of record and do not rely on memory alone, that there are some types of faulty workmanship that do not show up always in a matter of 5 years. And specifically, I could mention such things as faulty compaction and foundation work, which might take a longer period than 5 years, but certainly could be attributed to faulty workmanship. And if there's no liability, then that certainly is not in the public interest. Now, these are our primary reasons for opposing the bill as it is.
Question to Mr. Schmidt. If you had any personal experiences with Mr. Schmidt with defects which you discovered after 5 years?
Yes. Oh, we've had some trouble with some roofs, window walls, where specifications weren't followed in detail, and wind damages resulted in window walls caving in and portions of roof slipping simply because of faulty workmanship.
Now, were you able to make that up?
In a couple of instances, yes. Now, when you say, have I had any experience, the answer is yes. These are my own personal ones. However, there have been several others in the state of Oregon with school buildings. And the 10-year period simply gives the public agency a longer period of time to discover something.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you.
Is this Mr. Kalinow's room?
Kalinow's.
Oh. Jack, why don't you learn to write?
As soon as I learn how to draft bills, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jack Kalinowski. I'm representing the Oregon Construction Industry Council. This bill was introduced at our request, although now and prior to its hearing on the House side, it had a support also from the Professional Engineers of Oregon, the construction industry, the Consulting Engineers Council of Oregon,
House
Judiciary, and the American Institute of Architects. I want to give you a little bit of history. The 10-year statute of limitations bill was passed in the 1971 legislature, and it was pursued at that time because the construction of a 1967 statute left a considerable amount of doubt in some lawyers' minds as to whether or not we were actually covered by that 1967 act. happened that in December of 1971, about 6 or 7 months after the legislature adjourned, the Supreme Court handed down a decision which indicated that that there was a 10-year statute of limitations that applied to those involved in building construction, but they adequately explained the 1971 Act by saying that those who were interested could not wait for them to make the Supreme Court to make a judgment decision in this issue. The 5-year statute of limitations bill, as I say, was introduced at our request. We have an attorney by the name of Paul Meyer, who has a considerable amount of expertise in this area, testify over on the House side, and he was scheduled to testify here today. As I'm sure you will appreciate, he got a call from one of his clients. He had to go to Astoria, where he is right now, and he could not be here to present his testimony on our behalf. Now, when I found that out, I got...
There'll be another hearing. There's other people that weren't able to get here.
Thank you. I did, however, get a copy of the minutes of the House meeting, which has been, or the House hearing, which is before you. The couple of other things that I might add that I think might be of some value to you. A firm by the name of V.O. Schinnerer and Company, that's spelled S-C-H-I-N-N-E-R-E-R, our professional liability specialist, made a study of the claims that occur in this regard, the type of things that are covered by this proposed act. They found that 92.9% of all claims against those involved in the construction of a facility occur within 6 years after completion. We also made a survey of all of the states in the union, and we find that there are statutes of limitation relating to this same same subject existing in approximately, well, we've got results from 37 states. We find the lowest is 4 years. The highest is in the state of Maryland. It's a 20-year statute of limitations. And interestingly, California has 4 years, Idaho 6, Nevada 6, and Washington 6. I specifically marked the states that the state of Oregon abuts. Further statistically, the average is 7.3 years on these 37 states, and the median is 7 years. I don't think that I'd like to add any more, except to say that we do believe, for a number of reasons, most of which are elaborated upon by Mr. Meyer in the testimony that is in the minutes of the House meeting, House Judiciary
Questions
hearing.
Questions of Mr. Kalinowski? Thank you, Mr. Kalinowski. Charles Strong?
Madam Chairman, committee members, my name is Charles H. Strong. I live in Eugene. I am here to speak for the Professional Engineers of Oregon. I happen to be chairman of their legislative committee. My presentation is in the form of a letter, which Madam Chairman has a copy, I believe.
Yes.
This is regarding House Bill 2141. Professional Engineers of Oregon support this bill and recommend it for your favorable consideration. This bill is considered to be in the interest of the public for the following reasons. One, 5 years is adequate time for deficiencies in design or construction to become known. A longer time tends to throw greater emphasis on maintenance, thus clouding the issue. Item two, longer time requires longer periods of insurance protection by the designer or constructor, thus increasing the cost to the client without commensurate benefit. 3. Longer time tends to influence the designer or constructor to overbuild to protect themselves against inadequate maintenance in later years, thus increasing the cost to the client without commensurate benefit. 4. Accumulation of liability by a constructor or designer over a 10-year period can easily reach the millions. This must be insured against, thus creating a discriminatory liability and financial burden on those citizens, which is eventually borne by the public with little or no benefit. The Professional Engineers of Oregon is a private association of members of the engineering profession and is the state chapter of the National Society of Professional Engineers. It has 1,100 members.
Thank you, Mr. Strong.
Yes.
Are there questions for Mr. Strong? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll turn to Senate Bill 2279, William Bradley.
Thank you, Senator Brown. My name is Brady. I'm a physician. It's easy now. I introduce myself. This is like in the Brady Bunch, and everybody can immediately spell it. I'm a physician employed by the state of Oregon to direct the state medical investigator, state medical examiner's office. I've served in this capacity for 4 years and was Multnomah County coroner for 4 years previous to that time. I've worked with the present Oregon Death Investigation Statute, ORS 146, for over 8 years. And during that time, it has been apparent to me and the other people that I've worked with on the statute that, to say the least, it's awkward, confusing, it's been repeatedly amended, and it's very difficult to find a given subject in there. Realizing this problem, in July of 1971, I talked with Mr. Palette from the Criminal Law Revision Commission about the possibility of including a rewrite of our statute in the procedural criminal law revision. That committee worked with me for a period of about a year and a half. I submitted to them our first draft for a revision in November of 1971. During that time, we've gone over it several times. Mr. Jack Frost, who is the district attorney of Linn County in Albany, has rewritten it several times. The final complete rewrite of the state death investigation statute is House Bill 2279, which is in front of you now. In other words, we're completely scrapping the present ORS 146 and replacing it with this. Now, what we have done is two things. One, we have organized all of the present method of operation. In other words, in almost every respect, we are continuing to operate exactly the way that we do at the present time, except that we put it in an organized fashion. When we're talking about somebody's duties, somebody's responsibilities, we've got it down 1, 2, 3. The second thing that we've done is to take the combined experience of about 12 years working with the statewide system, which is relatively unique around the country. We've taken the experience of all the people who have been involved in it, specifically myself and Mr. Frost, and fed into this bill a lot of language that simply codifies the way that we are doing things right now. So there's a number of things that we do that this law specifically outlines, but there are no substantive changes. In other words, we're not really substantially altering anything.
You already have a board.
Yes, sir. And ma'am, we do, yes. The board exists. Now, the law is supported by the present Medical Investigator Advisory Board, supported by the State District Attorneys Association. Verbally, I have the support of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. The Oregon State Funeral Directors Association supports it. At the time of the House hearing, there was no testimony in opposition to the bill. We had a number of amendments that we put in there to clarify points, and these were approved by the House committee. Now, if I could make one point, then I'll answer questions on it. The principle of the state medical examiner law is simply that the investigation of unusual, suspicious, or unattended deaths is a medical problem. This was recognized by the legislature in 1958, and it carries through on this law. If there is a crime, the district attorney must be involved, and that too is carried through in this law. So the DA has authority in investigating suspicious deaths. But we want to stay away from the concept that death is a crime. In other words, the mere fact that somebody is dead, a child, a three-month-old child found at home, dead from a crib death, there is not in and of itself a suspicion of a crime in this. And I feel very strongly that the first thing that comes to somebody's mind when somebody dies is that there's a crime should not be the way to approach it. I believe that a physician in Burns, Dr. John Weir, in Corvallis, Dr. Rosendahl, Dr. Stolte, myself and Dr. Lumen in Multnomah County, a physician is the person who is first involved in the initial aspects of why did the person die. Our office investigates about 5,000 deaths a year throughout the state of Oregon. There are less than 100 homicides in the state of Oregon each year. So less than 2% of all of the deaths actually involve a crime. So the overwhelming bulk of our work, the thrust of our activity, is not toward the criminal cases. It's toward the unexpected, the unexplained, unattended deaths, which we feel is basically a medical problem. Now,
what do you do? What use do you make of the knowledge of the other 98%?
Not a great deal, Senator Burns. Senator Brown, of the knowledge, we supply service. I do three things. I administrate an operation, try to keep 36 county offices operating smoothly, filled. I supply service, 500 autopsies a year, death certificates, court testimony, and I teach. These are the three things that I do. And as far as accumulating from these deaths knowledge, I pass it on in sessions, in teaching sessions, but it's not a research project. We simply meet the service. In every community throughout the state of Oregon, people, for a wide variety of reasons, die unexpectedly or without attention. When these deaths occur, they become a community responsibility. And it's the decision, or has been for a number of years, the decision of the legislature that the community shall meet this responsibility by establishing a state office who will investigate these things.
Questions of Dr. Brady?
No, we don't have a coroner in place anymore.
No, we don't, Senator Hoyt. No, the coroner was abolished by statute in 1958 and in Multnomah County in 69.
I understand you to say that there are no substantive changes in this bill than present practice.
That's right.
Bill, you kept the coroner's jury.
We kept the inquest, yes, Senator Burns, we did. Mr. Frost wrote that section, and certainly if there's any questions on that, I would refer you to Jack. We've talked this over with a wide variety of people who have used the inquest procedure, and the impression we had from these people who had experience with it was that it could be a valuable tool, and they suggested we retain it.
It's used in Eastern Oregon, I think, more than Western Oregon.
We haven't had one in, we had one in Columbia County here a few months ago, never had one in Multnomah County while I've been there. But in other communities where there's a lot of talk in the small community, a lot of questions, the DAs feel that an open airing of the whole case has merit.
Senator Keith Burns.
This doesn't get into the jurisdictional battle between the sheriffs and state police together. Who takes over when they think a crime's been committed and so forth. Get into that at all?
No, Senator Burns, it doesn't get into the battle about who takes over when a crime is involved. However, there is a section of the bill that amends the present provision.
Where is that?
Page 18, the last page, line 17. At the present time, a state policeman, by definition, is a deputy medical investigator. In other words, the mere fact that he's a policeman automatically makes him part of our program. We have removed that section and made it an optional to be replaced in section 11, which is page 9. Section 11, subsection 1, line 12. The district medical examiner shall appoint qualified deputy medical examiners, including the sheriff or deputy sheriff, and a member of the Oregon State Police. So, both of the organizations, Senator, were concerned, for reasons you're aware of, about this change. So we split the difference, if you will, and said, fine, and each county will name at least one state policeman and at least one guy from the sheriff's office to be part of the program. And my understanding was that Superintendent Holcomb approved this change, and my understanding further, and I don't have it in writing, is that the Oregon State Sheriff's Association had approved of this change. And we're perfectly satisfied with it.
On page 16, line 30, you make it a Class A misdemeanor if anybody moves the body on in section 13 and 14. Gee, if you have a mother who comes on their child dead and you say don't touch, that seems pretty rough to say she's guilty of a Class A misdemeanor.
The point here, Senator Brown, is as follows, and I try to handle this when I instruct
the police. I understand the point, but I think the penalty's pretty rough.
No. What I try to tell the people is, look, we're talking here only about dead bodies. Dead bodies fall into three categories. Number one, a person who dies and there's an honest question about whether somebody may be dead. Move it instantly. Question, point number two, if there is a responsible party there who thinks that person may be alive, even though the investigating officer or somebody else thinks they're dead, if there's a responsible person that said, I think my child is alive, there may be a chance, move the body, call a doctor, you have to. This section refers to the willful, direct removal of a decomposing, stiff, cold, rigid body in clear violation of a rule that predominantly funeral directors are well aware of, that before they take that body down and embalm it, undress it, and clean it, we have to be notified. The problem occurs, unfortunately, from time to time.
Further questions of Dr. Brady?
I'd like to know where it defines what a death requires investigation for the language, isn't
in
it?
In section...
the definition.
There's a whole section, Senator Hoyt, on that.
Section 12?
Section 12. This deals solely, Senator, with the definition of the types of death that we're involved in. Homicides, narcotics, jail deaths, accidental deaths, poisonings, deaths in which nobody will sign a death certificate.
It's my understanding, Dr. Brady, that when you do or somebody does an autopsy, not at the request of the family, that you do not charge the family.
I'll go further than that. One, you're right. We do not charge the family. And two, it's the policy of my office, and I try to make it the policy of all of the other county offices, that if a case falls within our jurisdiction and the family wishes an autopsy, seriously and conscientiously, we'll do it for no cost. They pay us. We're paid well by the state. This is a service we should perform. I do not approve of medical examiner cases having to have private pathologists do for it. I know it happens. I try to clamp down on these guys whenever I can. And in the service area that I supply, there is never a question on that. If the family wants it, it's done. That's what we're here for.
Senator John Burns.
No, I have no questions.
Further questions?
No.
Thank you, Dr.
May I thank the committee?
Jack Frost?
I'm Jack Frost, the Lynn County District Attorney, and as Dr. Brady's told you, I had a, I guess, strong hand in writing this bill. I'd like to refer, if I may, particularly the inquest section. I know that that question's been posed.
Page, please.
I think it starts,
15.
Section 21, page 14, actually. 14, 15, and through section 24, Sonny Brown. Actually, as you know, or may be aware, the older inquest had a sort of a junior grand jury tinge to it, in that the purpose of the inquest could also, or the result of the inquest could also be rather archaically, that the jury of inquest could then allow or submit to the magistrate the request that a warrant be issued, which didn't seem to fit with common day practice on criminal procedure, and certainly doesn't fit with what is contemplated along those lines. And in keeping with what Dr. Brady has said about the idea that the purpose of an inquest, in fact the purpose of all these investigations, should be to determine the cause and manner of death, and in an inquest additionally the person who died and the time and place of death. But there is, in fact, it goes out of its way to make this not criminal and to protect the testimony that's developed in an inquest, so as to take away the whole onus of any kind of criminal procedure when you get to the inquest proceeding. My own feeling is, as a district attorney who has conducted one of these inquests in the last year under a very stressful situation, is that the inquest is no place for we're talking about crime. If that's the DA's, that's the way he wants to go, then I think his job is to take that matter to the grand jury and not have an inquest about the matter. The inquest, as I said, is where I think should be used as a fact-finding procedure in those situations where there's some real question and maybe a lot of concern about the cause and manner of the death. And that's what this provision has been revised to get to, and that only. If, upon completing the inquest, the district attorney who's involved directly in the inquest feels that there's cause for a criminal charge, then he can always file the charge himself by way of information, or immediately submit the matter to the grand jury and take care of it in that way. I would reiterate that Chapter 146, as it now stands, having worked with it as an attorney these years, that Dr. Brady is exactly correct in saying that it's a hodgepodge. It's not that it was meant that way, it's because it's been amended from time to time, and it's very difficult to follow through. And we think, particularly beginning with Section 12, Senator, and thereafter, that the procedure to be followed by those, for instance, funeral home directors, doctors, policemen, the people who have an interest in knowing what the procedure should be, Section 12 and on through 14, 15, until you get down even in Section 19 and 20 when we're talking about the disposition of property to deceased. It's all laid out here. Beginning with, I've got a death, so if it's in Section 12, it's one that needs to be investigated, and then who must I notify, and then what must be done with the body, and what steps must be taken, and steps into the autopsy. I submit it to you as being a very logical development of the procedure to be followed by those persons involved. And again, I would reiterate what Dr. Brady said there. I'm sorry to do this, Doctor, but I would take issue with the substantive. There are substantive changes in here, all right, but substantial changes, no. Substantive because there are...
Mr. Frost, both you and Dr. Brady have indicated this is a reorganization, and there's a whole paragraph of repeaters. What are the changes?
what are the changes? All right, I suppose you start at the beginning. The change in the organization at the state level, the changes are minimal. I think the same personnel involved in the state advisory board and so on and so forth. There are some changes, however, as to what their authorities or things they are to do. For instance, in Section 3, recommending a proposed budget, recommending the qualifications for deputy medical examiners. Now, these are all recommending powers. There are no final powers, but those things are not presently stated in the law. The next change I can think of that's different is that this bill permits, whereas in the prior bill, each time a district has been created, that is the combination of two counties to perform this examining function, this bill permits, with the consent and approval of the counties, for the formation of a district without having special legislation from the state. That's one of the areas where the counties had concern, and it's been and I understand that from the representatives of AOC that they now approve of the way it's done because the counties do have the last word. There are those kinds of things, Senator, but I don't think there are anything
substantive. Is there any other matter of substance?
Only in as much as I've indicated about the inquest, the matter of getting away from the criminal onus and only to the cause and manner of death. You spoke, for instance, of the penalties. I think you'll find that the penalties under the present law are probably, at least to my mind, Senator, less appropriate than the penalties that are here, and they do not refer, of course, to the current classification of penalties in the misdemeanor range.
Oh, I have the highest respect for Dr. Brady, and I realize I'm putting you on the spot, but he answered one of my questions that with 90% of the data they acquired, no use was being made of it. Actually, is the medical investigator's office of any assistance to you?
To me as a prosecutor? Yes, very much so. And I didn't quite hear your question. I didn't hear all of the doctor's answer, but I think we also, I think goes without saying that what they do by way of investigation is some great service to the public about insurance claims, what have you, with regard to death and also with regard to litigation that arises with regard to death. That was the nature of the question.
Questions? Since
Keith Burns. Well, I would gather an awful lot of it. It's assistance to you. Well, there's 100 homicides a year. The fact that he comes in and rules out all the rest of them as homicides, I assume that's some assistance to you, too, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Some great assistance. As a matter of fact, it's been my habit that whenever I have a death that I have questions about and yet I don't know exactly what to ask, if nothing better, I get on the phone and call either Dr. Brady or his assistant and say, now look, I've got a gunshot wound. What can I do by way of showing how this came about or what was involved? So that kind of assistance is available immediately, and then we get the autopsy from them immediately.
This is true because they are experts in forensic medicine.
Exactly, sir.
I have a couple of questions.
Yes, Senator John Brady.
Okay, there are some objections that we have addressed to the House Judiciary Committee from Lane County dated April 12, and I don't know whether these were before the bill was amended in some respect. Do you know that, Doctor? April 12.
I was unaware of any objections from Lane County Sheriff's Office, Senator Burns, until about 15 or 20 minutes ago.
All right. Well, let me just ask, because I think some of these don't speak to the way the bill is. One, says it gives the state police the same authority as a medical examiner or district attorney, but does not extend this authority to other peace officers. Now, Section 11 provides for the extension. Well, actually, the way the bill is drawn, it treats other peace officers puts them more on an equal footing now than they are now with state police, right?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Now,
what Vance is somebody from the sheriff's office must be.
Whereas now it's only the state police. Okay. Now, it says that it extends the normal duties of the medical examiner from determining medical causes of death to that of a criminal investigator. I don't know, that's a pretty fine line, but I think in response to your earlier response to Keith, they have a large part now in directing the criminal investigation of or participating with the DA, don't they?
Well, sure. The problem is, and as I understand, and this really maybe is fair to the fellow chair from Lane County, maybe wants to be heard on this, but the way I see it is that in any death, of course, potentially there's a crime, but often that potential doesn't rear its head until you get involved in the investigation. And one other thing I'd like to point out, Senator, when we talk about deputy medical investigators, although we're hesitant to spell it out this way because we know, Dr. Brady knows better than I, there are parts of the state where there aren't enough peace officers or aren't peace officers available on a wide enough basis. You mentioned Antelope. I don't mean to pick on Antelope, but something like that. There isn't a peace officer available. It's really contemplated that most deputy medical investigators will, after all, be police officers. They're the people who are going to take the time to receive the training and be approved by the medical examiner, which is what is required by this bill.
I have one other question, Madam Chairman, and it relates to this point here. When I was in the DA's office, we had an understanding with the state police, the sheriff, and the chief of police of Portland that there was a homicide case. The district attorney directed the investigation. There was a very good working relationship between the police agency. They worked very closely with the crime lab and also with the medical investigator. But it was the district attorney that headed the criminal investigation. Now, do you have that same situation in Lynn County?
We have that same situation, and I believe one of the reasons for it is that in Chapter 146 is the only provision I know of where the district attorney definitely is in charge of an investigation when if it's a death, and even though it may be a crime. In other areas of criminal law, the DA is not particularly in charge. And there's all kinds of constitutional arguments, but as far as the statute's saying, this is the only place I know where it is. This is the practice in Lynn County. I understand it's the practice in most counties.
So you don't see this extending your normal duties in homicide investigation?
No, I don't see it giving me any greater authority. In fact, it's spelling it out, kind of keeping me more in line if you want to look at it that way.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Keith Burns.
Well, one of the complaints I mentioned here, which seemed to me that I entirely wrong, and maybe you mentioned it, John, paragraph 3, okay, the bill gives the state police the same authority as a medical examiner or a district attorney, but it does not extend this authority to other peace officers.
Well,
that's
wrong.
I know it. I covered that. Dr. Brady
And then again, over here in 7, they say the bill discriminates against peace officers as opposed to state police. There's somebody here in the Peace Officers Association.
We're having somebody from Lane County.
Well, what about the Peace Officers Association? Speak for
us. Yes.
Are you speaking to me?
I don't know
that
anyone.
They have a representative who is
here.
Well,
there
she is, right there.
Yeah.
We have
Sheriff Truitt here. I don't know whether he's signed up to testify or not.
Yes, he is.
I think a representative from
Lane
County.
He is speaking for the sheriff?
Yes.
Of the State of Oregon?
Pardon
Association?
For the Sheriff's Association.
Okay, thank you.
There's one thing I'd like to point out along that line. As the law stands today, every state policeman, regardless of his training and experience, how long he's been on the force, is a deputy medical examiner. And I had a long discussion with Superintendent Holman about it and said, Holcomb, and said, you know, this is intolerable if we're going to make an effort to be sure that people who are deputy medical investigators know their business. And as a result of that, we made a change that Dr. Brady called out. They may be appointed as deputy medical examiners, and then in each county, at least one state policeman and one deputy sheriff or the sheriff is appointed, so that we definitely have peace officer coverage, whereas now we don't accept the state policeman, at least not as required by law.
Senator
White.
Clear in the bill is to talk about districts.
Yes.
outside of larger than one county. I keep referring to that, but I can't find the reference.
In section 7, wait a minute, yeah, section 7 sub 5, that's on line 28, page 6. Two or more counties with the approval of state medical examiner advisory board and commissioners of each county may form a district medical examiner's office instead of an office for each such county.
A further question, Manager. Now, at the present time, does the state pay the county medical officer of investigator?
No. No, the county in the present law, the county pays the local medical investigator, and they all call it investigators, and we use this word interchangeably. But Dr. Brady's office is paid at least largely, I think he himself is paid by the state.
That's because of certain size, a law provides that counties of a certain size will have a state paid officer.
Plus the fact that correct me if I'm wrong, Doctor, but I think the state medical examiner, who is Dr. Brady right now, I think that he is specially provided to be paid by state funds.
I'm trying to think in terms, Madam Chairman, of when a district would be formed, of more than one county. Putting every county has a county health officer. Well, if they don't, would that be the time when they would do this?
This is part of the problem, Senator, that a county health officer is not automatically the medical examiner for the county, and probably should not be. There are many counties in which his duty is relating, let's say, to public health, administering public health programs, immunizations, and so forth. He's just not involved in this. He's too busy with something else to be the kind of medical examiner we'd like to see involved. Now, in many, your county and mine, for most of the time that I know of, it has been the same man, but there are many arguments that it should not necessarily be the same man. And to answer your other question, when would they do this? I suppose when the counties found it to their advantage to join forces to get this job done.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Frost. Mr. Connor?
Chairman, committee members, I'm David Conner. I'm a deputy sheriff with Lane County Sheriff's Office and administrative aide to Sheriff Spirits, and acting both on behalf of the Lane County Sheriff's Office and as a committee member of the Oregon Sheriff's Association. The Oregon Sheriff's Association does not endorse this bill as it stands. The bill, in its intent, we feel is good. And there are many areas that have been testified to that has remedied problems in the past. However, before we could endorse the bill, we would like to see some amendments to the bill that would facilitate a closer cooperation between the medical examiner, the local district attorneys.
Come on in, the water's fine.
The local sheriff's office and local police. The entire bill seems to be directed more toward what the majority of the deaths are, non-criminal deaths. And we feel covers rather poorly the small percentage of deaths which do involve some violation of criminal statute, the homicides. I won't go into the points. You have our position statement before you, and I must apologize in one respect. This was drafted to present to the House Committee, and since then they have made an amendment which remedies the problem of equal representation among police agencies. However, there has been one major change in this and gross bill would bring about that has not been brought out or discussed, and that's in section 13. Death investigation shall be under the immediate control and direction of the district medical examiner and the district attorney for the county where the death occurs. Under the old statute, it merely stated that the death investigation would be under the direction. This bill, in its entirety, by this section, places the entire obligation of death investigation on the medical examiner and the district attorney's office, and makes no provisions for local law enforcement's role. And we have to be realistic about death investigations. When somebody dies, they don't call the medical examiner, and they don't call the district attorney. They call the local law enforcement agency. And in the vast majority of cases, the local law enforcement agency is the first public official that arrives at the scene. Now, the duties of the local police are quite clear in notification of the medical examiner and the district attorney's office. And in Lane County, we've experienced a very good working cooperation between the three different agencies. However, just recently we have experienced some deviation from this control with our office and the district attorney's office, where they have investigated a death unbeknownst to us, which can create severe problems.
Well, Mr. Conner, Madam Chairman,
Senator John Boone,
who in your judgment is more qualified to conduct an examination into cause of death, a rookie patrolman or a forensic pathologist?
Obviously, the forensic pathologist.
I'm personally conversant with cases that occurred in the county I represent where bodies were moved and evidence was destroyed unwittingly because there wasn't a qualified medical examiner at the scene. And it would seem to me that to specifically define whose control this is under, that being the most qualified person, would enhance law enforcement.
Quite the contrary. Well, in a non-criminal investigation, yes.
No, I'm talking about a criminal investigation.
If we put priority over determining the cause of death over the collection of evidence which may determine who caused that death, we have a conflict. Now, this...
I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
Now, this allows the medical examiner to preserve evidence, to take evidence under his control, and it's quite inclusive as what type of evidence he can take. This evidence, of course, it's designed to allow him to gather evidence which may help him in determining cause of death.
Well, it also helps the prosecution of the case. If you have a shirt with powder burns on it, some such thing as that, then the medical examiner takes it from the scene of the crime. You don't have chain problems that you have oftentimes with the police officer taking it and giving it to another one and putting it in the property room and then sending it over to the lab. I don't concur with your questions about the chain. Seem to me it simplifies the chain.
I can't agree with that. This I feel that this creates a problem with this, the chain of evidence. Number one, the evidence is not at the disposal of the law enforcement agency, which is going to do the meat of the criminal investigation work. We feel that the role of local law enforcement, whether it be the sheriff, who is the chief law enforcement agency of a county, or a chief of police of a municipality, that his role also should be designated and outlined in this bill, so that they are not working under the control of the non-police personnel, such as a medical examiner, but rather working with and in cooperation with and under the direction of these people. I foresee all kinds of problems with splinter investigations going in all directions without the cooperation between these agencies would be of prime necessity for any conviction in a criminal matter.
For the questions, Mr. Connor. Mr. Connor, if you had what you wanted, you would have on page 10, line 10, you'd have the peace officer with jurisdiction be in charge of the investigation. Is that specifically what you want?
You're referring to page 10 in the engrossed bill?
Yes.
And line 10?
Right.
Is that under section 13?
Yes. Don't you have the engrossed bill?
Yes, ma'am. I have no line 10.
10?
Section
10. Section
13. Oh, I see, line 10. Excuse me. Yes, ma'am. What was your question again?
Specifically, if you had what you wanted, you would have the investigation in the police, peace officer who has jurisdiction of the geographic area.
No, the law is very explicit on that. The district attorney must investigate a death. We feel this rather excludes local police. We would like it to be back as it was and deleted this, the words, the immediate control, and have it back, and death investigation shall be under the direction.
The immediate control you object to.
Now that opens all kinds of doors. Under this, there's nothing in this that says that the district attorney has to cooperate with local police, with state police.
Well, he's not going to stay in business very long if he doesn't cooperate with you.
Well, we feel that in a serious crime such as a homicide, that to be successful in determining who may have caused that wrongful death and bringing that person to trial and presenting the evidence necessary to either convict the person or free him, the agencies have to work close together. And we don't feel that the chief law enforcement agency of a county should be subordinate to the district attorney in this role.
Senator Kiefer.
Let's see, what's the section where it says about them appointing the local police officer and the state policeman as a medical examiner?
Page 9.
Page 9.
Line 11.
Line 11.
But the DA was the chief law enforcement officer in a county.
He's already got that authority. He's got the authority under section 13 right now.
I
think. He's the chief law enforcement officer in every county.
Further questions?
Well, they're required under Section 11 in all counties or districts. The medical officer, subject to approval of district attorney and applicable civil service regulations, qualified deputy medical examiners, including the sheriff or a deputy sheriff, a member of the Oregon State Police for each county. So when you get over here on 13, when you say that the district medical examiner,
the district and deputy medical examiner are two different persons.
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be, the deputy could be there just as well as the district medical examiner would be there, just like a deputy district attorney could be there as much as a district attorney.
That's exactly our point. We would like this included in this bill so that this is delineated and not taken for granted. As it stands now, there's nothing that requires a district attorney to cooperate with the local law enforcement agency.
He has to. Where is he going to be?
More and more district attorney's offices are establishing their own investigative staff.
Where do they get them from? Usually they're off without the deputy sheriff.
They hire them from various sources, but they are not police officers with other agencies. They're investigators with the district attorney's office and not associated with any other police agency other than the district attorney's office itself.
Further questions? Thank you, Senator Smith.
I'm going to try one more time to figure out what you want. On line 10, that you, this bill on page 10, do you want to eliminate the words immediate control?
The immediate control and that was deleted, then it would revert to the original statute.
Death investigation shall be under the direction of the district medical examiner and district attorney.
Well, it wouldn't revert because there's repealers on the last page, which I assume would repeal whatever you think is going to revert.
Well, this would put it back into the cooperative vein of the original.
Well,
snatching.
Senator Smith, did you have a question?
Yes. And the point is that you're differentiating between immediate control and the word direction.
Yes, sir.
That's the problem. Direction does not mean immediate control.
Sure. Not your sheriff.
No, sir.
No, by law, the medical examiner has certain duties in a death investigation that supersede local law enforcement agencies. He has specific duties. Historically, we have worked under his direction. And historically, the medical examiner has not become involved in the criminal investigation. This entire bill does not differentiate between a medical death investigation and a criminal death.
Would that take care of the bill? As far as you're concerned, trouble is not a
seizure. No, sir.
All right, what else?
Right now, like I say, the wording in the bill itself, as far as the death investigation, is all encompassing. And I feel we have two distinct areas. We have the medical aspect of the death investigation, determining the cause of death, and then we have the criminal aspect of the death investigation in determining who caused the death as a wrongful death.
Absolutely. You don't have the language that you present.
No, sir, but the Oregon Sheriff's Association would be glad to present an amended
I'd like to ask Dr. Brady a question.
Yes.
I don't see any difference between immediate control and direction.
Senator Smith, the wording of the present statute is there in front of you. We did not change control and direction.
No,
The word immediate is not in there, and if you want to take that out...
You don't care about that.
No.
I couldn't see any reason why you would.
No.
I, in deference to these people, I might see the rest of their amendments. I think we're quibbling over nothing here.
Why don't you compare them and send them to us as quickly as possible at the latest by Friday? Further questions, Mr. Connor?
Thank you. Let's turn to House Bill 2820. Mr. Truitt.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you, sir.
This particular problem first came about, I recognized it after going into the sheriff's office in 1969, that the state police or sheriffs do not have the authority to issue a parking ticket. In fact, we have no parking ticket. In the motor vehicle code, there's 13 specific places where parking is prohibited. And in many counties, they have erected signs for no parking, the discriminatory thing, in various places. And especially on boat ramps, where people park their car, unload the boat, leave the car, sit there, and go off the boat. And we have no parking ticket to issue to them. This particular draft amends 221.340, which was passed some years ago, giving the city police the authority to issue parking tickets. And if it contains certain things, that in itself is a complaint. At the present time, we have to use the uniform traffic ticket, which is a long, lengthy thing, and is a complaint itself, and must be filled out in entirety. And we can't do that when the person parks the car and walks off and leaves it. And this is a very badly needed piece of legislation for the both state police and the Sheriff's Association or Sheriff's Office to be able to issue parking tickets in those cases specified in the motor vehicle code. Now, I've talked with Holly Holcomb, Superintendent of the State Police, some 2 months ago, totally in support of this particular bill. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Questions, Mr. Truitt. Senator White.
Are there county ordinances that provide for no parking?
No, because the counties do not have that authority, generally speaking, except the home rule counties. We go by the state statute.
Well, what about boat ramps and this kind of thing outside of the city? What kind
it's
of...
posted for no parking.
Well, who's going to post it?
The county.
Well, if they can't do it by ordinance, then...
But they do it by state statute, because state statute allows us to post those places where parking is prohibited. But we can't enforce it because we don't have the parking ticket to issue to the person.
Are most of them in state forests or federal forests?
No, not necessarily. County parks, for example. And I have in mind the Cooper Creek Reservoir, where the county built the boat ramps. And in fact, the reservoir was built not by county money, but all there was some in it. We post the boat ramps, no parking. And yet we can't issue a ticket on unless we use the long uniform traffic ticket, which is a complaint itself. And this is a backdoor approach.
Well, some of the way I hear you is kind of a contradiction that you can't pass parking ordinance. Still, you're going to use a state law to make no parking by a boat ramp. I don't understand that.
We're empowered to enforce the traffic laws in the state statute.
Yes, sir. I understand that.
And by that there, 483.042 gives us the right, local government, the authority to post signs wherever needed to regulate traffic.
But those posted signs don't have any legality, do they?
Oh, yes. Well, they do. But all we need is a parking ticket, according to this, to be able to issue to them in order to enforce it.
Now, who authorizes the posting of the no parking sign?
Road department, for example.
County road department?
Yeah, they install the signs based upon the approval of the board of commissioners.
But you said they couldn't pass an ordinance unless they were home rule county.
Well,
so what good is that sign?
Well, it's still under state statute that we're enforcing it, you see.
No, I don't see it. Sorry. Can somebody help me?
We're going to solve the problem with House Bill 3009 from the local government.
Now, to give counties... I'm not saying for sure that the county cannot enact an ordinance. Maybe they can, but there's certain ordinances they can, and certain ordinances they cannot.
Yes. Well, I'm not aware of any legal no parking sign that's put up by the authority of a county court.
You don't know of any legal one?
No. Unless it's a home rule county.
I think that's probably right.
And I don't think the state puts up signs along the road, no parking, excepting under special situation, and I think it's questionable what the legality of that is.
All right. For example, on a state highway, if there was a no parking sign there for some reason, we could not issue a parking ticket and not be on state property because we have no parking ticket. We should have the authority to enforce that particular no parking sign being on state highway.
I have no quarrel about you having to be able to issue a parking ticket, but I'm just trying to figure out
mm-hmm.
if the places where you want to use it, whether you can use it, whether you do any good.
Well, for example, on Garden Valley Boulevard in Roseburg, County Road, on a curved bridge across the river, the young people park their cars outside the fog line, but on a curve, and go swimming. And it's all signed, no parking.
Well, that's by state.
No, that's the county road. But it's signed by the county.
I don't understand. Some lawyers can help.
Well, assuming you have ordinance power to put this, or you don't, if there's violations of somebody who does have the authority, getting down to line 22, you want to be able to give them a citation other than the uniform traffic citation.
Yes, we would design.
Why is that?
Well, the parking ticket we need is something like a 4x4 size, and not this 5x8 size as the uniform traffic ticket is, which, according to the language here, if it contains certain things, it is a complaint. And that's authorized under 221.340 now for the city. Why can't the state police or the sheriff have the same authority? And we would get together and design a parking ticket to be used.
Why don't you use the uniform traffic?
He doesn't want
because
to fill it all
we
out.
We can't fill it out. The man is not there. It goes to the court, and all it has on it is the description of the car. It has no name until the man does not appear. Then we get registration on it and fill the ticket out. And that may not
so
be the man's
parking by just leaving it there?
Right.
Well, that's what we do in the city of course.
The cities all do that now.
I know,
Dave. We're asking only for the same authority the cities have. No difference.
Further question.
Sounds fair.
Thank you, Mr. Truitt. David Town.
That's Connor, and I have
a
testimony on that. Sheriff Truitt.